Welcome to the Hairdryer Treatment Podcast, powered by Kevin Grogan Soccer, Soccer Coffee, and much more. Delighted to have Joe Bean back in the studio today. Joe, we're obviously going to talk about Manchester United today, a fantastic club with a fantastic history. You know, obviously a club close to my heart, and kind of looking back to the Sir Matt Busby era. Obviously he was a legend, came to the club in 1945, and he really was the first person probably to bring in the Manchester United brand and philosophy of playing expansive football and also breeding young players through the system and trusting them. What are your memories of Sir Matt Busby?
Yes, my memories would be post Matt Busby, after the 1958 crash, the Munich disaster. My memories of Busby's team would have been Charlton, Best, and Law. But I would have known about the Busby era and his policy on youth, especially, which was where you know, the story really began, the United story, as far as becoming a global brand. After that tragedy, they became a global brand under Busby, you know.
So he obviously, you know, as we touched on, was one of the first to trust the youth system and bring players through. And the players he brought through initially, they called them the Busby Babes.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, the Busby Babes, one of the key players in the Busby Babes would have been Duncan Edwards. Now, he would have been in the 50s, obviously. I was born in 61, but obviously we hear all the stories.
But I've heard about Duncan now, just from reading stuff and seeing documentaries and talking to people I know at the club. Apparently he potentially could have been one of the greatest of all time at Manchester United.
Definitely.
Unfortunately he died in the Munich air disaster, which we'll get onto in a few minutes. But, you know, what did you hear about him?
Yeah.
Anyone that I've ever talked to or any interviews I've heard, they just said, particularly Bobby Charlton talking about him, he just was a real all-round player who had everything.
Yeah, well, back then, the system, you had two inside players, inside forwards, is what they called them. And he was also a great defender. He also played up top, wherever they really needed him. But a lot of the greats, people like Stanley Matthews and even Bobby Charlton, one of the things that blew them away when Duncan Edwards was around was his presence. He had an incredible presence. He was only, remember, 21 when he died. 22.
A big athlete.
Super. He's actually only 5'11", but it's his aura. He had an incredible aura about him. And his athleticism was incredible. He had a great shot with both feet. And they claim that he would have been one of the best.
Yeah, Bobby Charlton often went on record saying he could have been one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So obviously we had that initial group of the Busby Babes coming through, and then for those who don't know, Manchester United were one of the first teams to enter into the European competitions, and it was a big ambition of Sir Matt Busby to try and win that. And tragically, they were travelling back from a game, I believe, in Germany, and they landed to do a to refuel, and
then in Germany,
and on the takeoff, the plane crashed.
Yeah,
a number of players died, Duncan Edwards being one of them. Do you have memories of that? Or,
well, my memories of that, again, would be, you know, with my family. You know, my father, obviously, and my uncle, Willie Bean, who played for United and was a scout for United. So my memories or my recollection of all of that would have been through stories. Obviously, you see documentaries over the years and you read about it, but I remember as a kid in the late 60s when it was Best and Charlton and Law time, I remember talking and hearing about that great team, the Busby Babes. But, you know, yeah, it was after the war, so there was a major amount of depression going on in Manchester. Manchester, renowned for producing great teams and great bands, etc. So it was a great climate around at the time. And the people were desperate for something new, something with promise and hope. And that team gave them that. And with so much promise that they had and potential, you know, the average age would have been like, you know, 20, 21 of this young group. With the loss of those young kids who had, you know, shown so much potential, that's where it all begins. That's where the United story truly takes off.
And it is around like, that obviously, tragedy. You know, we know Manchester United now is one of the biggest global brands, one of the richest clubs, if not the richest club in the world. But there's always been a great romance attached to the club. Is part of that romance the fact that they dealt with such adversity during that period where they had built a team of young players for a large chunk of them to pass away in a tragic accident?
I think so, yeah. I think it's a big part of their history. I think it's the beginning. I mean, you know, everybody in England devastated. Manchester came to a halt. And around the world, they were being recognised around the world as such a great up-and-coming team. But we can't deny that the tragedy of at Munich and losing those young players, it's an unfortunate thing to happen, but no one has forgotten it, and it's still very much a part of who they are.
And then,
so, yeah,
Sir Matt Busby, the manager, head coach, he nearly died himself, but survived.
Yeah.
Bobby Charlton was critically injured, he survived.
Yeah.
And then really the kind of, if you like, rocky story starts where Sir Matt gets himself together and his staff, the likes of Bobby Charlton, and they start rebuilding. And 10 years later, I believe, in and around that period, they had a new team with new players, and they won the European Cup, which is now the Champions League. And the people you mentioned, Charlton, Law, Best, all of those players were on that team.
Yeah.
How big an achievement was that to go through that tragic event and then rebuild and then go and achieve your dream and your goal of winning a European Championship?
Well, you know, it was thought that these Busby Babes were irreplaceable. They probably were, but to be able to build a team after such a loss, particularly how talented they were, it was always going to be very hard to match that level. But it did take a while. They bounced back, and then once Law and Best signed. That attacking formation was made alongside Bobby Charlton. So it was all about tightening up in the midfield and in at the back, and it was an incredible achievement. I mean, just to win a European Cup in itself was a great honour for the club, I guess.
And there's a statue of the three players we mentioned at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Charlton, Law, Best.
Yeah.
And just to go on, touch on to George Best, for those who don't know, George Best was from Northern Ireland, moved over, and became one of the greatest players in the world. And was up there, you know, when you talk about the greats of the world, you talk about the Pelés, the Eusebios, George Best, Maradona. Obviously, in modern times, you talk about the Messis and the Ronaldos. But George Best has to be in that conversation.
I think so. I think so. I think it's hard to measure players from the past to the players in the present. But one of the things that these greats have is that George Best would not be out of sorts at all playing in the modern day game.
Well, I think the greats show, my opinion has always been, the greats will adapt to any generation.
No, absolutely, yeah. Best would not be out of sync at all with the play nowadays. He was that good. Smashing player, had everything. Huge heart, and really and truly another reason why United has become what they are today, the brand that they are today. And Best is one of those reasons. We've got different players over the years, but Best was definitely one of the first superstars.
I got to meet him twice when I was there.
Oh, lucky you. What was he like?
I met him twice in the training ground. I was a 15-year-old. I just signed full-time, obviously over from Dublin, and he said hello to me. And my biggest regret is that I didn't really have the confidence back then to go up to him and have a conversation, because by all accounts, he was one of the most approachable, likeable people you could meet. And you would have loved to have talked to him and picked his brain, but as a shy 15-year-old, I didn't do it. And a bit of a regret of mine, but just to be in his presence was amazing. And you know, he's one of the greats of all time, obviously. So that was a great period, obviously, for Manchester United.
Yeah, late 60s, yeah.
Yeah, and then you kind of had the transition period, which is not unsimilar to what's going through or happening at Manchester United now, where the great Sir Alex Ferguson retired and hard to replace. And back then, I believe Wilf McGuinness came in as the first person to succeed Sir Matt. Wilf's son, Paul McGuinness, actually coached me while I was there in the academy. And what a coach. By all accounts, Paul was a great player as well. But there was Wilf McGuinness and then Frank O'Farrell. And
yeah,
then
Frank O'Farrell from Cork, yeah.
And then Dave Sexton and Ron Atkinson. So there was a lot of managers, a lot of transition during that period. What was that period like, you know, for you from a United fan? Like, was it turmoil or was it a case of we'll get it right eventually?
They had good teams. They just couldn't, they weren't consistent enough. They also had, like, for example, they had a period under Tommy Docherty, you know, who did a great job at Chelsea, and they brought him in, and he took on the likes of Steve Coppell, Gordon Hill. You remember all those
players,
right?
Yeah.
You know about all those players.
He was having a good run, Tommy Docherty, as a manager.
Tommy Docherty had a great run. They were relegated. He got them back up. They may have won an FA Cup with him. He had some nice players in his team. They played some good football, but and then they ran into some trouble with Tommy, you know.
So the Tommy story, just to touch on, I mean, obviously he was doing well, and by all accounts the fans liked him because he was playing a great brand of football, the Manchester United brand.
Yeah, he definitely played the Man United brand, two wingers, yep.
Yeah, and the story goes that he ended up with the wife of one of the physios.
Yeah.
You know, but in fairness, it wasn't ideal. The club thought it was bad for the brand and they had to release him. But to this day, I think he's married to that lady. As he says, he fell in love with someone and he couldn't help that, even though it wasn't really ideal. But so that kind of ended that reign, and then they moved on to Dave Sexton and then obviously Ron Atkinson. Ron would have been considered a manager that did okay and won some
big cups. Yeah, no, he did. The Greenoffs were there. They had some really good players, you know. And also they had a very good Irish contingent of players there as well. The likes of Kevin Moran, Paul McGrath. And you know, there's also a huge, massive influx of players from the north, where Best was from. And for many, many years, there was a huge Belfast contingent at the club. Sammy McElroy, Dave McCreary, Norman Whiteside, one of the youngest players ever to play in a World Cup. Quality footballer,
scored
great,
a great
striker
goal for Ron Atkinson against Everton, FA Cup final.
Yeah, I think he
whipped
also
it into the bottom corner.
I think he scored one against Liverpool too.
Yeah, so just in that year there, Ron Atkinson, there was a great brand of football. They were winning a few cups, but the Holy Grail was the league, and they were struggling still with that.
Yeah.
And that was ultimately probably Ron Atkinson's downfall. And then, of course, they brought in Sir Alex Ferguson. At the time, he'd had success in Scotland with Aberdeen. He kind of broke that cycle of Rangers and Celtic. He'd won a European a cup in Europe.
Yeah, fantastic achievement.
Was it
really
it the European Cup or the Cup Winners' Cup, I believe? So he was on the radar and they brought him in and obviously everything changed.
Absolutely. Now, early on, he did a little bit of luck. Like, all managers need a bit of luck and it's always touch and go. But once he got settled in, probably one of the best coaches on the planet at the time and remain so, and it wouldn't necessarily measure the actual, you know, titles and cups that he actually won, but more so the consistency of every single week you watch them. Once they hit form under Ferguson, it was just non-stop for a ridiculous amount of years. To me, you know, as far as longevity and as far as you know, the consistency, probably surpasses Busby in that area. Don't get me wrong here. Now, the Busby Bays were great and Busby had some great players, but so did Ferguson. And now, we're bringing in the big brand players for United's global identity. You've got, don't forget, Ferguson managed Roy Keane and Paul Scholes, arguably the best central midfielders of their time. And he also had people like Cole and York up top. Again, you could probably argue they were probably the best attacking duo of their time. He just had great players. Cantona, I mean, you saw Eric Cantona yourself. He was there at the club when you were there. Did you not see him play? You did, right?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously Eric Cantona was a massive presence.
Yeah.
I would have been a kid at the time, 12, 13, 14, 15.
How good was he?
Going over on all my school holidays to train. And, you know, just touching on, you know, what you said about Ferguson maybe exceeding Busby. Busby really set the foundation of the brand of football and bringing players through. And what I think Sir Alex did was he picked that back up and said, I'm going to produce players, I'm going to increase the scouting network, and we're going to play a great brand of football.
Yeah.
But within that production of players, he also brought in a lot of big names, as you said, like Eric Cantona. So all his teams had those big showcase players to complement the youth that he was bringing through. But Eric Cantona, they say, was the main reason they won that first league. But of course, we have to discuss, you know, the first 3 years Sir Alex Ferguson was there, you know, they didn't win anything. And
people
talking about him maybe getting sacked. But obviously, he won that FA Cup. And then after that, once they won the first league, the gates opened and they never looked back.
Now, like I said, you need a little bit of luck, and you need people to persevere with you when you're coaching, especially at such a massive club. But, you know, I now and then I'm online, and I like to see what's going on at United, and I like to check out review comments on certain times that are going through. And you know, when you look back at the history of Manchester United, the two biggest moments that they have is Busby and Fergie. Everything else before Busby and everything else in between Busby and Fergie is not that great. If you look at the winning percentages, they're quite low, actually. So there's just, again, going back to the tragedy, it definitely has been the foundation of the club. But let's not forget, though, you know, during the tough times early on in the century, let's not forget where they started. But to me, you know, Busby and Ferguson, to me, are the main players that United has had in their history. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
So, yeah, I think with Sir Matt Busby, you know, creating the brand, as we said, producing players, dealing with the Munich Air disaster, bouncing back, winning the European Cup, and then obviously with Sir Alex Ferguson, 13 league titles, five FA Cups,
incredible.
Two Champions Leagues, many charity shields and different things like that. And also did it in the Manchester United way. And I know people ask me, what is the Manchester United way? Well, the Manchester United way is trying to win every game and playing expansive football that excites the crowd, and also giving young, home-blooded talent an opportunity. And I think that's where we're lacking at the moment. No disrespect to Jose Mourinho, or Louis van Gaal or David Moyes. I don't think David Moyes was really given enough time, to be honest. Louis van Gaal came in, and now Mourinho. The thing that upsets me is just it's not Manchester United. It's not. I think fans don't mind if you lose some games, as long as you're playing the Manchester United way. You're giving the young people a chance, and you're breeding for the future to have success. And I don't see that at the moment. And that's probably the biggest disappointment to me at the moment, looking in. It's just not Manchester United. They've lost their identity. Some would argue they've sold their soul, and that's the frustrating thing. But Manchester United has always been a club that's probably built on overcoming things during the bad times. And if you consider this a bad time, a club like Manchester United will always prevail eventually.
Yeah, you hope so. You expect so. They're still the number one when it comes to, you know, the business end of things. They're right up there with the top teams on the planet, Barca, Madrid. But style-wise, I wouldn't put them up there. I wouldn't put them up there with those teams. Style-wise, they're behind Spurs. Style-wise, they're behind... I wouldn't say that they're behind Arsenal, but Arsenal are beginning to show some class now. Chelsea, to me... similar kind of a style, kind of a, wouldn't be as swashbuckling as, say, you know, Manchester City. I mean, they're years behind City now, Man United are, as far as like style of play, you know, the possession oriented game.
Swashbuckling, Joe, that's a phrase that that gets used in many, many documentaries about Manchester United and different things along the way. Tell us about that word.
Yeah, it was just, you know, you can look at the likes of Ryan Giggs as swashbuckling. Just that idea of going at it, getting into the opponent's half, going down the flanks, taking players on, just in a relentless effort in expressing yourself and the athleticism and the and the skills carried out with such great awe. I mean, swashbuckling would be, you can associate swashbuckling for older viewers, I suppose, or even for today, the likes of Errol Flynn, when you watched years ago the fencing movies, which I watched, that was all Zorro, all these kinds
Errol
of characters.
Errol Flynn, he did a great Robin Hood.
Swashbuckling stuff.
My grandmother, my dad's mother, would have had all those movies, black and white, and as a kid over there, I used to borrow them, and I don't know why I liked their movies at such a young age, but he did a great Robin Hood, Errol Flynn.
Yeah, action-packed kind of...
We'll talk about him next time.
Yeah, action-packed kind of heroes, if you like, on the pitch. And you had, you always had great flank players under Fergie.
You always had wingers, Man United.
Ah, fantastic wingers. Great wingers over the years.
You could go through a ton of Giggs, Kanchelskis.
Yeah.
And then before that, Georgie Best played on the wing. And, many, many others.
Definitely,
Steve Coppell, was he a winger?
Coppell was a winger. Yeah. Gordon Hill, we mentioned him already. We had so many great wingers. David Beckham was a great winger. Great delivery, Beckham.
That famous 7 jersey.
Oh, yeah.
David Beckham.
Oh, what a
strike. George Best. Brian Robson.
Robson was
Eric
a great player.
Eric Cantona. Wearing that 7 was a big deal.
Wearing that 7 was a massive deal for anyone at United. All the famous 7s.
Who was the best 7?
Oh, I'm going to go with George Best.
George Best.
Yeah.
Great.
But, as far as this style now, they're not playing let's call it the beautiful game, all right? Teams that play the beautiful game. City. Well, Pep Guardiola, you got to look at the manager, right? No matter where he goes. Barcelona, when he was there, the beautiful game. What a team they were. Even now, Madrid have played it. Now, Mourinho was at Madrid, so let's not forget what Mourinho brings.
Well, he's not a bad manager. People criticise Mourinho. He's obviously a world-class manager. There's no doubt about that. But for me, he's not a Manchester United manager.
Recently, he wasn't doing too good in the media recently. He was kind of bad-mouthing, criticising his players, which he shouldn't be doing, but he was doing it anyway. But more, just in the last few weeks, he seems to have curtailed his criticisms. I'd say he was in the office having a few words with the big guns there where they told him, well, no, one headline was keep your mouth shut. But I'd say they chatted and they probably both agreed that criticising his players is not the way to go.
Do you think that conversation happens? I'm not convinced that the hierarchy of Manchester United would go to their manager and tell him how he has to conduct himself in the press conference.
They may not have sat in a room with him, but he certainly got wind that he needs to stop, he needs to stop criticising his players and the way he was throwing them under the bus, because if you look at the last few weeks, he's been actually praising his players now. So whether or not they had a word with him, he may have copped onto it himself that he needs to stop doing it, because it has certainly stopped in
the
media.
Maybe Sir Alex had a word.
Yeah, well, Alex has been going through a lot as well, hasn't he? Sir Alex Ferguson, he's been through a lot. He just came out of a serious operation.
Health is good at the moment. We're running out of time here,
but
want to finish on a positive.
Definitely.
For both of us to pick your greatest Manchester United memory.
What a great question.
It's a big question.
It's a great question.
I can lead it. Obviously, fortunate enough to be there and play. 1999, treble winning season. I was a youth team player at the time. We went to the Spurs game, obviously in Old Trafford, when we won the league. Went to Wembley, where we played Newcastle and won the FA Cup. And went to the Nou Camp and won the Champions League. And that period for me as a player and a Manchester United fan was fantastic. And I'd have to say that's my best Manchester United memory.
That's an amazing memory. My memory, I may have mentioned this before, and it just sticks in my mind, sitting in the living room in my home with Willie Bean, scout for United, and my father, John Bean.
Your uncle, of course, Willie Bean.
Willie Bean was my uncle. John Bean was my father. My father played for Rovers. He knew the game really well. Sitting in the living room in our home, watching Man United on Saturday night with my brothers. And I might have been a sister or two there, I'd say, watching that game. And just listening to Willie Bean talk about the game. He didn't say much, but what he said was invaluable. That's my favourite memory of United, as far as like where it began. I also have a great memory of watching United with my brother, the FA Cup, and United were beaten, and he was so upset. That's a real memory for me, because I was impressed by that. He was younger than me, but I was impressed by how passionate he was about the United team. And my final memory is watching United in the Champions League, getting beaten 1-0 with only minutes left, and Ole Gunnar and Teddy Sheringham coming on and scoring two goals to win the Champions League final. That was incredible. Everyone had written off United.
99? Is that what you're talking about?
When they won the Champions League against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, that's what
2-1,
I
fantastic
win.
Fantastic. And I'll never forget that moment.
So, obviously, Manchester United, fantastic club. We could stay here all day, Joe, talking about them. We've worked through a lot there. Thank you very much for coming into the studio today. Really appreciate it.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Joe.
Yep.